Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we're going to be touching on a big economic event that's been happening this week, and that is the mining in Indaba. And we are going to be having a discussion just around some of the main points that came out of that conference this week. Particularly of interest is the energy debate that came out because of the comments from the minister, that is Gwede Mantashe, talking about energy generation and energy support in the mining sector. I'm joined in the studio by Jason van der Poel, who is a partner and head of the energy sector group at law firm Weber Wenzel, together with Henk Langenhoven, who is chief economist at the Minerals Council. Gentlemen, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Thank you, Will.
Now, the theme for the 26th Investing in African Mining in Indaba was optimizing growth and investment in digitized mining economies. But as you know, the conference was starting, my colleague Lisa Steyn, who writes for around the mining sector for the Business Day, actually put it quite nicely when she said in her article earlier this week that the word on everyone's lips was load shedding. And there were some bombshells that were actually dropped by the minister, as alluded to earlier on. He was saying that reality has actually forced the government to take some serious decisions, and therefore we must allow our mining companies to generate energy for self-use. You don't need a license for that. You just register and you run right ahead. I think as a first point, that seems big. Simply because for a long time, independent power producers, all of that stuff has been like a big debate. But now, you know, you have someone just coming and say, oh, miners, just go put your name down on the piece of paper and then you can, you know, start generating electricity. Is that how simple it's going to be? Perhaps, Jason, I'll start with you.
Thanks very much, Mudiwa. The minister, Minister Mantashe, said specifically that he would enable self-generation by mines and also facilitate municipal generation options under distributed generation. A distributed generation is a reference to a term in the Integrated Resource Plan. Yeah. That's our plan for the development of energy generation resources in South Africa up till 2030.
Yeah.
And what he's saying is that they would allow South Africa to close the energy gap that we currently have by allowing mining companies to self-generate power, and then also this reference to municipalities. So what is going to be very interesting to see unfold will be how the minister and the department enable that through legislation, and then the urgency with which mining companies will be able to put up the resources. There's some legal aspects to the debate, which
I can imagine,
which I'll try to keep succinct and not boring at all.
Yeah.
In general, when you generate electricity, you need a generation license from the National Energy Regulator of South Africa, NERSA, and they're very careful in licensing the generation of these projects. Mm. And then, depending on whether you fall within or outside of the Integrated Resource Plan, the question then is, If it's inside the plan, you can then go ahead, get your generation license and generate. If it's not inside the plan, you need to undergo an additional step, which is get a ministerial deviation from the Integrated Resource Plan to generate electricity.
Is this a deviation?
So so the deviation will be a document signed by Minister Mantashe, which says this power that you'll generate is not part of the Integrated Resource Plan, but I, as minister, am going to allow you to develop this. And the debate that has emerged is what has been allocated within the RP. Mm. There's an allocation for distributed generation, which is uncapped up till 2023, after which there's a size limit of 500 megawatts per year up till 2030, as I say. And distributed generation is simply defined as small-scale generation that is close to the end user.
Okay.
But there are other parts of the Integrated Resource Plan that refer to 1 to 10 megawatts.
Yeah.
And anything above 10 megawatts will need this ministerial deviation.
Okay.
And so a number of mining companies have had engagements with the minister.
Yeah.
And there's some very positive indications that he's now allowing these mining companies to go ahead.
Hank, did you guys know that this was going to happen before the announcement? What type of engagements had been going on, I guess, with the sector and the minister, and how much of a concern has, I guess, load shedding actually become for the mining industry?
It's been a massive issue.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is we are not producing at our capacity. And neither, by the way, is the manufacturing sector. Mm. If you see the announcements from steel, neither is the food processing sector.
Mm.
They are heavily dependent on electricity provision, and for that matter, us and your household, etc. So we the undercapacity utilization of what we have,
yeah,
has been a major issue. And if you look at the statistics that we think, what happened last year, we think the mining sector contracted by more than 2% last year, and that was on almost a 2% contraction on the previous year.
Okay.
And we are losing employment, we have idle capacity, and the fact of the matter is when you have idle capacity in your economy, you either sell the machinery for scrap or you have to lower your workforce. And that's the last thing that anybody wants.
Yeah.
The further matter is that, of course, mining is driven by two things. One is the commodity prices and the other one is costs.
Yeah.
Commodity prices have been performing better for a while, and lately, because of the instability, one shouldn't really talk about that. But there has been good price movements, and if you add the exchange rate, then the rand prices have not been doing too badly. But a trend that we saw in the past, where miners respond to better commodity prices, have been broken virtually.
Yeah,
it's as if these logistical and electricity and cost problems have prevent them from actually responding to better market conditions internationally. Mm. And that is really the worrying thing. We've also seen, over the last 2 years, we've seen fixed investment in mining improving again. But for a long period, it stagnated and did not improve. And the most worrying issue is that although there has been overall gross fixed investment, a lot of it was in depreciation. What has happened lately over the last 2 years is there's been a substantial increase in investment in equipment and machinery.
Yeah.
But not in the construction of mines.
Yeah.
The construction and expansion of mines have peaked in 2011.
Yeah.
And has been dropping all along.
Mm.
So this is one of the problems that we're having, that we need to understand what the cost of electricity, the tariffs of electricity would be, because it's a major input into cost. It differs, of course, for different types of mines. But will it be available? And that has become one of the big constraining factors, because, I mean, you can imagine a mine builds its infrastructure based on the resource that it thinks it can mine. And now with these constraints and the other logistical constraints, it is now literally trying to just, I almost want to call it a duck and dive, between the curtailment and the non-availability of, yeah, electricity, just to get to the guidance that they've given, whatever mine you're talking about, for production that they've given to the market. And it's been a drag on mining production, on mining employment, on mining fixed investment for quite a while, and it is very, very important that we solve this.
If I'm understanding you correctly, you're saying that South African miners have not been able to, I guess, take advantage of the rebound in global commodity prices. Simply, they haven't been able to take advantage of that upswing, one. Two, they haven't been able to, I guess, put back the capital into expanding their operations. But in all of this, their costs have just been ballooning. which has resulted in the 2% contraction year on year, 2018, 2019.
Yeah, the comparison is between how commodity prices move and how costs move.
Yeah.
And I mean, our costs are moving at 3 or 4 or 5 percentage points higher than the PPI.
Yeah.
And it's been lagging what happened in commodity prices for quite a while. So the net result is profitability is declining.
Hmm. Jason, your thoughts just around maybe some of the things raised by Hank, together with if we're going to actually implement this, is it as easy as the minister having made that announcement on Monday, or is there now a process that's going to go in? I think earlier on you were about to get into, you know, there's a ministerial waiver and all of that stuff. Like, what's the next process now? And how soon, actually, how soon can a miner actually start producing his own electricity?
The law currently goes some way to enabling miners to generate their own power, but doesn't go all of the way, in my view. Right now, we have the Electricity Regulation Act, which enables generation. And then it sets up NERSA as the entity that licenses the generation of new power.
Yeah.
So if a miner wants to generate, it'll generally need to get a license, unless it's exempt under the Act.
Yeah.
And there are a couple of buckets in the Act that are in Schedule 2 of the Electricity Regulation Act, which deal with these exemptions. Mm. They all speak to, on the whole, they speak to generation of less than 1 megawatt. And all of the clients that that Weber Wenzel is servicing who are thinking about these projects tend to be looking at projects way in excess of 1 megawatt.
One megawatt.
And in fact, way in excess of 10 megawatts even. So what the minister is enabled to do under the Act is to, first of all, process an amendment, which then would enable projects of this larger size. Mm. Secondly, the minister is also empowered under the Act to issue deviations, like I said before, from the Integrated Resource Plan, allowing miners to build these projects.
Yeah.
And then NERSA, the National Energy Regulator, has to license these projects. So those are the regulatory steps. Practically, once those regulatory steps have been done, it would take either the mining company contracting a contractor to build this plant, or an independent power producer to be contracted by the mining company actually to build the project.
Yeah.
And a large-scale solar power project, we're seeing fairly short lead times to the building and commissioning of those projects.
Mm.
So we're talking anything between 6 months and 18 months.
Yeah, it seems, just if I can butt in there, it seems as if 9 months is the minimum.
So 9 months.
A lot of work has been done,
yeah,
and a lot of project design has been done, but because we don't have a go-ahead, but from the moment it's been given, the go-ahead has been given, you must add 9 months before it will really have start to have an impact.
There are some long lead time items, particularly from a legal perspective, permissions around the environment and other sorts of permissions that you might need with regards to externalities of the project, land-related permissions that you would need. And those could take longer than the 9 months.
Yeah, yeah.
But what the Infrastructure Development Act and some other legislation, they authorize expediting of these permits in certain specific circumstances, which means that we could hopefully bring that power on in a short space of time.
So when I say 9 months, from the moment you have all of that, 9 months.
9 months.
9 months to 36 months.
The 9 month build.
Okay. We're just going to take a quick break and then we'll be back to discuss what else happened at the mining in Durban.
Tune in to Cargumentative every Monday morning on Times Live Motoring. You can join myself, Thomas Faulkner, and my regular gang of automotive misfits as we discuss motoring news, views, and of course, have a cargument or two. That's Cargumentative, only on Times Live Motoring.
Welcome back to the Business Day Spotlight. We're in studio with Jason van der Poel from Weber Wenzel, together with Hank Langenhoven, who is from the Minerals Council. We're doing a roundup of what happened at the mining in Durban this week. The big issue that we're talking about just before the break is the energy issue. Just listening to Jason, it sounds like there's a lot that needs to happen, especially from a regulatory point of view. And then Hank is then saying that after all of that is done, add 9 months and then, you know, people can start really producing that electricity. But I just want to perhaps shift to what else happened, because the actual core business outside of the energy debate, etc. And I'll let Hank take the lead on this one. What else happened at the Indaba? I understand you just came back from there. What actually happens at the Indaba?
For us as the Minerals Council staff, we try to talk about important issues that are on the agenda and on the radar for us. And one which is related to what we're talking about is, of course, the green revolution and the need to cut carbon emissions. We had a session very well attended by journalists on our views about coal.
Yeah.
And that we really not denialist. I mean, just the subject that we discussed earlier.
Yeah.
All we think about between 1.4 and 1.6 gigawatts of electricity that the mining companies are thinking of, all of it is actually alternative energy, not coal. And we stated our frustration and to a degree I sense huge frustration from the lobbyists as well, that it takes time. The fact of the matter is that it will take time. This is not film that you can change in the 3 years to digital photography. We have built these massive power stations. They are going to be around for probably the next 50 years, and we're going to decommission, and which is in the integrated resource plan, that we will decommission about 11,000, if not more, of the old power stations, the coal-based and the pollution culprits. So it is actually accepted that this is going to change, and the electricity supply industry will dramatically shift towards alternative energy. Our biggest issue in mining specifically is we need base load. We run smelters with 200 megawatts, and you can't cook it at half the temperature. You have to cook it at full temperature 24 hours a day. So there is an issue, and we watch the battery development arena very closely, because that will be the link between either wind and solar and us, and or gas and that can fill in around the edges. The other issue is modernization, which we call modernization, which people call the digital economy, etc. We know that because our mines are so old, especially the gold mines and some of the platinum mines, that we will have to do things differently. A reality is that a lot of the bits and pieces of the solutions are around. It's just very difficult to actually implement it in an old mine. You can imagine if you have a drilling machine that's the size of your bathroom bath as against these massive machines that can tunnel a tunnel that you could put the Gautrain through. You can just imagine the technology differences and the differences in managing that. A side issue for us, which didn't come up at the Indaba itself, but which was important, is to better manage our supply chains. And the savings that can have a major impact on our profitability. So, and it's apart from the new, what shall we call it, the new age of minerals that's zinc and copper and lithium and platinum, and you see the rhodium and palladium prices shooting through the roof. It's a very uncertain world because the technologies have not been sorted out. And there are different applications for batteries, for example. Each application for a battery demands different types and different combinations of minerals and commodities. And that has not been sorted out. So you see these massive movements in prices. And lithium is a very good example. There are several lithium mines that are closing down because there was a complete oversupply and the price fell through the floor, which is a new world that mining is in. New types of minerals, but also new instabilities and volatilities that have been fed into the system. So those were two of the subjects that we have been talking a lot and were talked to a lot by other people.
Jason, your takeaway is just maybe some other highlights from the Indaba?
I'd say the environment, to what Hank said earlier, very important consideration in the broader mining context.
Yep.
Health and safety, the question of mining fatalities, and some positive indication that those are declining in South Africa. I think Hank summarized very accurately the spectrum of issues that were discussed at the Indaba. I think the one additional energy related issue was the minister's announcement of a second generation company potentially owned by the state that would generate power. I think that is a suggestion on which we'd need to see more clarity from the policy makers before it'll be possible to exert or issue a robust opinion on. But
because
it'll be very interesting to see.
I find it very interesting that we are talking about a new power, a new energy company, yet the one we have, that the single one we have so many problems with that one, and we're now talking about having a new one, and we haven't really even broken up this one into the three companies.
That's a very interesting question. Also, the minister mentioned the Dutch model on a couple of occasions, which in that discussion, I think that the minister referred to using the transmission grid to get power generated in one part of the country to a place in another part of the country where someone could get that power.
Yeah.
The Dutch model is in reality a deregulated market, and I believe that that's what we need in South Africa.
Mm.
That is a situation where there are a number of different power producers competing with one another, trying to provide the best service to their customers, and as a result, putting downward pressure on the price of electricity in the country. Mm. I think that would be ideal.
Yeah.
The suggestion that that another state-owned enterprise would compete with Eskom, I think that would need to be interrogated very carefully. But the reality is, through the Renewable Energy IPP Procurement Program, we already have a number of private sector generators of power who are perfectly capable of developing and producing large quantities of energy. And what I'd hope to see arising from all of this discussion is the rapid putting onto the grid of power. And what's required for that to happen would be the minister pushing the button on further procurement of all sorts of energy that make up our energy mix in the integrated resource plan, not least the fifth round of the Renewable Energy IPP Procurement Program, but also the import of liquefied natural gas and the generation of power.
Yeah.
The IRP mentions the conversion to gas from diesel of the existing peak power projects in South Africa. That would be really important to balance the intermittent nature of renewable energy.
Yeah.
So the idea of wind farms generating power only when the wind blows, and solar farms generating power only when the sun is shining.
Yeah.
And I think the importation of LNG is something that's been envisaged and catered for in our energy plan. And what we now need is for forward movement from the department to enable the procurement and then the development of this power post haste. Needless to say, we're in an emergency situation in South Africa.
Yeah.
One thing to add is in December, the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy released a request for information for emergency power. So those projects that are ready to get up and running and generate electricity as speedily as possible. And there's been a large take-up, a large number of people that have responded to that request for information.
Yeah.
The next step then will be for the department to design a procurement process and then to issue that and begin the procurement of these projects to generate power.
Mm.
The quicker that can happen, the better. And there's some innovative solutions ranging from existing large-scale renewable power projects that are fully permitted and ready to be constructed, all the way through to the often mentioned power ships that could float in and plug into our grid at port and put a fairly large quantity of power into our grid, an expeditious manner. So the hope is that the department will process the request for information quickly and get the procurement program up and running as quickly as possible.
Okay. Now, the last question, I just want to get both your thoughts, your take on this particular issue just around miners and this energy issue. What are the funding implications, and do you think there'll be appetite, I guess, because Hank has already said that there's a lot of work that's already been done, but for any additional capacity, I can imagine that miners will be approaching, you know, the banks, you know, trying to get trying to put this infrastructure down, etc. Do you think there will be that appetite from, you know, the financial sector to actually fund some of these projects, or will the experience of Eskom and its accumulated debt sort of taint their appetite to actually fund these additional energy projects?
There are huge amounts of money available for alternative energy worldwide. Mm. So I don't think it's... The real cost is the money that the mines will have to sink into this instead of expanding the mines. That is the real opportunity cost.
Yeah.
So the... We can't wait, and I cannot, I like the legal words, post haste. We need to immediately solve the bottleneck that we're in now. But there's actually a bigger constraint wall that we're going to walk into if we don't immediately start with the next rounds of the IPP programs or whatever installation that we're going to put in, because we, the 11,000 to 15,000 that we think will be have to happen by 2025, 2030 is just to replace what we have. There's no growth built in that. It is vital that the economy, that the fixed investment takes place to actually give us that scope to get the economy growing. And it is really a crisis. And the problem, if you reverse engineer the timing it takes to put whatever type of energy in place, we are already running very tight. So I think that is quite important. Can I just say one other thing about the mining in Daba? It was the safest year in mining ever in the history of South Africa. We lost 51 people, which is terrible, but it was the safest ever in the history of mining, which even some of the international guests were saying, but can we not learn from what we have done here? And in some of the health matters, our TB and silicosis levels are now below the economies. So there were things that we could celebrate as well.
From the Indaba?
Yes.
Okay.
You were back to your question on thoughts, back to your question on the funding. We've got a very strong banking sector in South Africa. We've got highly sophisticated banks with geared up teams that are able to come up with innovative funding solutions for the debt financing of these projects on mines. We also have, to Hank's point, a lot of funds internationally available for alternative energy. What ultimately will make a project bankable will be looking first and foremost at the off-taker, who buys the power, and are they good for it? Will they pay for it? You've got big mining companies with balance sheets that need to invest in this for the sustainability of their business in light of insecure security supply. What the other things that lenders will look at will be things like the regulatory aspects, making sure that all works, and then drafting the contracts, the power purchase agreements, the ability potentially to wheel the power to other parts of the business or potentially other customers, and the security of that revenue stream to pay down the debt over time. So a whole spectrum of considerations lenders will apply to determine whether the project is bankable, but I've no doubt that the funding of these projects is entirely possible, and the banks and funders will come up with innovative solutions to make sure that happens quickly.
Okay.
We often remind Eskom that we are paying our bills. We buy 30% of their power, but we're paying the bills.
Paying the bills. So with that, on that bombshell, we come to the end of today's Business Day Spotlight. Thank you so much to our guests. We had Jason van der Poel, who is a partner and head of the energy sector group at law firm Weber Wenzel, together with Hank Langenhoven, who is the chief economist at the Minerals Council. Just a roundup of around what's happened at the mining in Durban this week. And it was a very interesting discussion, particularly that last part, that the money is there for some of these projects. It's just making sure that everyone has their ducks in a row. But otherwise, as long as that's in place, then, you know, we can do it.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
My thoughts on this whole energy debate, I think it's actually quite an interesting one. And I think I would actually support this plan simply because anything that reduces strain off the grid, amazing right now. Despite the fact that we have that 46,000 megawatts installed capacity, we are still barely able to, you know, produce the 30,000 that's needed to keep South Africa afloat. So anything that's gonna, you know, take some of these miners over the grid. I think we heard Hank saying that miners need, I think he said 200 megawatts. You know, they, some of the miners need as much as 200 megawatts. Imagine you have, like, let's say 10 of those miners. That's already 2,000 off the grid and, you know, stuff like that. But what I'm more interested in is how ratings agencies, particularly Moody's, factor the minister's pronouncement into its decision about South Africa, because Moody's has highlighted, Moody's, the IMF, the World Bank, whoever you're talking about, has highlighted Eskom as a major risk to South Africa. But if there's some site of de-risking energy and saying, okay, fine, we're going to introduce this thing that takes out a major drain on the grid, and we're possibly going to, you know, ease the burden on Eskom. Does that do anything to, you know, maybe help how the Eskom risk is actually looked at by international agencies? The country just needs to be more proactive about this energy thing. Like, I don't know how else to put it. Like, Hank was talking about the fact that miners have done this work already, the fact that they could literally start doing it tomorrow, but he said 9 months, but they could literally start doing it at the drop of a hat because they've been proposing these things, etc. And the fact that it's just another example of another policy that has been sat on for a really long time, and only now, you know, people are acting on it. And you're not really acting on it, you're reacting. Right, you're not being proactive about anything. So I really hope that, you know, after this, things are going to be more proactive. But if it does work out the way that they're talking about, I think it would be a positive. And if you look at mining once upon a time was contributing as much as 14% to GDP, but I think right now it's below 7%. And it's an industry that has supported the South African economy for decades now, and anything that's going to help the national grid, anything that's going to help mining, is a good for South Africa. So with that, we've come to the end of the show. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Life under the Podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we're hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you so much to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza, and this has been the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.